And you're tuned in once again to the Jewish Activist Network, broadcasting Wednesday nights from midnight to 1 a.m. I'm Joe Orlo, your host, and our call-in number, 718-569-0921.
Hello, 718-569-0921. I'd like to give a first start off, to give a shout-out and a mazel tov to Elisha Kobri on his marriage to Rachel Leah Katz. Elisha, if you're out there, mazel tov. And Rachel, if you're out there, Elisha Kobri to Rachel Leah Katz, mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
So we have, of course, we're standing right in front of Tainus Esther. And Purim is Sunday. And there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot of things that people might point to about the Amaleks of nowadays and the opportunities that we have nowadays to take action. So, during the times of Amalek, during the times of Haman and Purim, after Haman's plans were foiled, we were given permission to turn it around on him, given permission by the king, Ahasuerus, at that time. So, Joe, what do you had some ideas as far as comparison Purim to today.
Just as we were beginning the show today, it occurred to me that what we do here on the Jewish Activist Network, why we started this program to begin with, was to reach out to people because we were being politically involved. We were lobbying on Capitol Hill. We were hiring attorneys to fight the government against things that we felt were unjust. And we were looking for other people who were involved in similar activities or who might want to be involved in our activities. And we were looking to get together and see how we could coordinate and work together as a unit on behalf of the Jewish people, on behalf of issues and topics that concern not only ourselves, but the entire Jewish nation.
In fact, I don't know if people out there are aware, we've been gotten contacted by a few different groups who want to partner with us to do certain actions. Now, some of the groups are not even Jewish. We have a fellow who's very, very pro Eretz Yisrael and cares about the Jewish people very much. He has a Christian group, and he wants to get involved. So he's contacting us, and there are people out there who are contacting. And we ask you, or Jewish people, to contact us also.
And that's the power of radio. That's why we selected radio. The whole idea of our program was to allow people to overhear a little bit about what we do. 1 hour a week, we go live on the air, and we open up our microphones in our studio, and we broadcast in New York City and around the world through the Internet also. And the idea was that people could hear a little bit, maybe hear the kind of excitement that we generate and want to be part of what we do. And it's gratifying to hear that people do hear us, do learn about us, and want to be involved.
Well, I would just say that let me give the number out, 718-569-0921. So we definitely want you to get involved with us, and we're going to pick up on that theme in a few minutes. Let me give a quick, interesting vart somebody told me about Amalek. And he was talking about the idea that today, there is no nation of Amalek, because at the time of Sanferev, and when Sanferev was a, he mixed up the nations, and they basically disappeared as a unique nation. So the question was, and he heard this being given over in Shir, how could you define Amalek today? Now, this is not really Amalek, but it's I find it very cute, Bart. And Joe, you can tell me what you think. He said like this: sometimes you have somebody who hates Jewish people, and let's say they want to harm Jewish people. But if you could go to the person, he could say, "All right, I'll give you money. I'll give you $1,000. I'll give you $10,000, and leave us alone." And some people will take it. But if they're the type of person who doesn't care about the money, and they're going to say, "I don't care about the money. I hate you so much that I want to continue. I want to kill you anyways." That's Amalek.
I think what I've heard brought down is that anyone who acts like a Amalek is to be treated like a Amalek. And for our listeners who may not be familiar with the term Amalek, it's a nation, a distinct nation, a descendant of Esav, often translated in English as Esau, the son of Rebekah and Isaac, Rivka and Yitzchak. They had a son, Esav, and he had a descendant, Amalek. And what was embedded in him was the hatred that Esav has for Yaakov. It's a kind of, it's way beyond anything that might be termed anti-Semitism. It's a hatred that where the hatred of the Jew becomes the mission of their life, this is my understanding, to the exclusion of everything else, even to the point where they're ready to be, if I could use even the term Mesiras Nefesh, they're ready to give up their own lives in order to promote their goal of attacking attacking Jews and to the nth degree. And I think what you're saying fits in with that, that if you can encounter somebody who has that kind of an attitude, who nothing will sway them from their hatred and their desire and their acting on their desires, God forbid, to wipe out the Jewish people, I think that this is what we can consider a Amalek in our times. Of course, in most recent history in the past century, we saw it embodied to some, many would say, to a great extent in the activities of the Nazis. And we see it going on even in our own lives today with perhaps what's going on in Iran, what we've spoken about in past shows.
Now, let me just, for people out there who might not know this Shabbos, we should, I believe it's the Shabbos, should be listening to the Parsha of Zohar, and I'm just going to read it right now on the air for those people to know. Let me just read the Parsha of Zohar. Zohar es asher osa l'cha Amalek b'derech b'tzeichem b'mitzrayim. Remember that which Amalek did to you on the road when you went out of Egypt. Asher karcha b'derech. He met you on the way. V'yizanev b'cha kol ha'nechashalim acharecha. And he, the word zonav is from a tail, like he took off, he lopped off all the weak ones after you, the people who were following and weak on the outskirts. V'ata oyef v'yogea, and you were tired and weary. V'lo yore elikim, and he did not fear God. V'haya, and it will be. And it will be. When Hashem, your God, gives you rest from all of your enemies around. In the land that Hashem, your God, gives to you an inheritance as a portion to inherit. Blot out the memory of Amalek from under the heavens, you should not forget. Do not forget. So that is the basic parsha, and this is something which we read. We remind what Amalek, the people who try to wipe us out, for absolutely no reason. And even though nobody else at that point, they were the first, they decided to go and cool it off for other nations to make it say, oh, the Jewish people, we can attack them. They're not invincible. For absolutely no reason and without provocation. So that is the parasha of Amalek. We will be back in just a minute. Please stay with us.
Do you have email? Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails and to Rabbi David Eidenson's events emails. The Jewish Activist Network emails are once a week and give you information about our upcoming Jewish Activist Network shows, including links to background information. Rabbi Eidenson's emails are brief Divrei Torah that are immediately relevant to our lives. Take control of your email inbox. Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails by sending an email to media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Subscribe to Rabbi Eidenson's emails by emailing media@secretscale.com. Do you shop in Midwood, Borough Park, Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, Crown Heights, or the Five Towns? Pick up a free copy of The Views, weekly available in many stores in these localities. To advertise in The Views, 718-377-8016. Are you looking for part-time work in advertising sales? The Jewish Activist Network has an opening for a sales representative. Email the Jewish Activist Network for details. media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Again, the email address for the Jewish Activist Network, media, M-E-D-I-A, media, at jewishactivistnetwork.com. Do you have Seamus at your house or at your shul? Allow us to handle your Seamus for you. We handle your Seamus in accordance with halacha. $20 for a 30-pound plastic kitchen bag of Seamus, $8 for a plastic shopping bag of Seamus. Larger quantities are eligible for our discount pricing. Call now for details. 917-517-7486. Purim and Pesach are coming. Now is the time to schedule your Seamus handling. 917-517-7486. And we're back right with our regularly scheduled show, which is the Jewish Activist Network, broadcasting right here on AM 620, Wednesday nights at midnight to 1 a.m. Every Wednesday night at midnight. Tune us in here on WSNR AM 620. I'm Joe Orlo, your host, and our call-in number, if you want to be part of our conversation here, 718-569-0921. Again, our call-in number, 718-569-0921. And to review, yeah, go ahead.
No, so you were telling us about, you're just talking about Purim and connecting it with activism.
The overall idea of Purim, it seems to me, in the big picture was, my understanding is that there were a segment of the Jewish community, the leadership, much of the leadership that got involved very too closely with the government, got pulled into what the government was doing in Persia. We're talking now over 2,500 years ago at the time of Purim. In the area which today is known as Iran, so traditionally known as Persia. And what happened at that time, an edict came down from Shemayim, from heaven, a decision was made that there would be, and the way it played out with that, because in the Megillah itself, we don't actually see any direct mention of the name of God anywhere. But the way it played out is that the king of Persia then went ahead and under the advice of one of his advisors, and something that probably was in his heart also because he went along with it, he took money for it. Basically, there was a plan to wipe out the Jewish nation. And because the Jewish nation was almost entirely, if not entirely, under the control of this king, so therefore this attack could have been an ultimately lethal blow to the entire Jewish nation. The ruling came down that people could openly attack Jews and kill Jews, and it was with the agreement of the government that this could be done, and even with the help of the government. So ultimately it's turned around through the work of Esther. That's why it's called Megillas Esther. She's the one who puts her life on the line. It's Mordechai's plan that Esther, who has become queen at that point, goes ahead and she uses her inside access to the king to go ahead and turn around the edict to make it that instead of the Jewish people being attacked and with the government agreeing to it, that now the Jewish people can stand up. The government says the Jewish people have the right to stand up and to attack their enemies. Those who would attack the Jewish people can now be legally attacked by the Jews. So the end of the Megillah then, and why we have the whole holiday of Purim, is because the Jews do band together, and they do fight, and they are successful. They fight against their enemies, and they attack their enemies, and they kill their enemies. Now, ultimately, then, what is going on is an activity by Jews, a political activity, if we define politics as using power in the world, if we define it very broadly, Jews use their political power, which has been given to them by the government, to go ahead and to attack their enemies. And the way they do that is by actively arming themselves and actively fighting their enemies in actual battles and killing their enemies. So what we have today in the United States is an analogous, I don't want to say an exact comparison to what happened then, but an analogous situation. In the United States, everyone who is has citizenship in the United States, which is everyone who's born in the United States basically has a citizenship, which would mean every Jew born in the United States is a citizen, has certain, I guess what we term rights. And part of that is, or abilities to act politically, and part of that is a person can lobby, that they can vote in elections, they can actually run in elections for office on a federal level, they can lobby. Not only that, there's the what is known as free speech, such as what we're exercising right now on the air with this radio program. by way of comparison, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, the government there, the current governments there, do not have unlimited free speech. Someone cannot get on the radio like we're doing right now in Eretz Yisrael and speak out on just about any political issue they want. There is very limited licensing of radio programs and so on. So what we do, people often ask us, they say, well, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you lobbying? Why are you doing all these different things? And we say, well, there are other organizations maybe that are to some extent exercising free speech and to some extent maybe exercising political power, but they're too close to the government. Again, in kind of an analogy with Purim, that they have something to lose if they stand up and say really what has to be said, which is along the lines of, for example, that the Arabs have to be expelled or should be expelled from the land of Israel because of the mortal danger that the so many hostile Arabs present to the Jewish people, that it should be a policy that the Arabs should be expelled because it's simply a matter of saving Jewish life. These are the kind of things that we're getting up and saying and that we're lobbying for. And other people may feel it, may agree with us, but they don't get up and say it because they're trying in some way maybe not to harm their connection with the government. And you might ask, does the U.S. government really, or does the government in Israel really have an agenda to harm Jewish people? And we would say, to some extent, yes, they do. Ahasuerus, you know, to some extent, the fact that he went along with Haman meant that he was against the Jewish people. There are, as we were mentioning earlier, what a Malek is. There are a Malek elements, I believe, and from my understanding from speaking to other people, historically has been a Malek elements within the American government. And I'm not by any stretch of the imagination saying that the United States government is a Malek or the United States is that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you find within the United States a Malek elements, and you find embedded in the U.S. government a Malek elements. And it's within the bureaucracy. And to a great extent, it may be to the greatest extent, it may be in places like the State Department. And because you have a Malek there, and because they're the ones doing the Malek activities, and they also hire, when they retire, they move on to another position, they hire someone with similar views. So you have, that's why I say they're embedded there in the government. And then the point is
mm-hmm. that there is a lot of opportunity for people to get involved.
Yeah.
And we do have Jewish groups going down and trying to lobby in the Congress. See, we could do things very simple, and it doesn't have to be such difficult things. It can be as simple as coming down to Washington and talking to senators and congressmen. But the point is, if you would give us a call and you'd be in touch with us, we could do things, we could coordinate it. And one thing that's important that people are not speaking about is this idea of the terrible things that are going on in our Israel. And the fact is that the Jewish groups that go down there, they really do not speak about what we would speak about. They would basically, the problem is that the Israeli government itself is not wise enough to understand that they're being attacked, and they are also tremendously pressured by forces in the government over here and other places. And they're also very leftist. So you have many different things playing at the same time, happening at the same time. And all these things together make it very, very difficult for people in Eretz Yisrael. You have people who are being driven out of their homes, and Israel is being attacked. And people do not speak about the real threat. So this is why we're speaking about it. And we think that you have to get involved. By the way, the involvement, and we're going to take a caller in a second, but the involvement is, you know, a lot of people out there, you might feel, well, all right, it's too far, it's too theoretical, it's too vague when you talk about Eretz Yisrael. But the truth is, there's a lot of other things that you can get involved in also. There's many Jewish people who live very close in our area, in Brighton Beach, a lot of Russian Jews who don't know much about Judaism. The organization's called Jews for Judaism. There's Eshat Torah. They try to have, and they focus on Americans and Russians. There are one-to-one programs. There's a lot of things that people, you, right out there, can get involved in, things that are much closer to home. So if you want to get involved in Klal Yisrael and our brethren in Eretz Yisrael, do that. If not, you can get involved right here. Many people who need help, just in terms of Yiddishkeit. So there's no reason that you can't get involved. And if you give us a call, we'll direct you, and we'll talk to you, we'll find out exactly what you want to do, and hopefully you can do something for the good. We do have a caller.
We have our friend David White with us here on the Jewish Activist Network. David, thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, not a problem. I'd like to say a good evening to both of you gentlemen. It's been a while, you know, since I've called, you know, but I listen faithfully. And I could not let the Yom Tov of Purim come in without speaking with you and this great listening audience.
Thank you so much.
Who
could go by Purim without giving a call and talking about if the Purim comes once a year and it's so full of meaning?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Purim is definitely about activism, you know, and it was because of Jewish activism that an entire nation was saved, you know, from the Amalek of Haman. But, you know, I was thinking as you were speaking, you know, and you made a point which is very salient, and you were sure, you know, to clarify that, you know, we're not saying by any stretch that America is a Amalek, but there are forces, you know. I don't think it's an accident, Joe or Yosef, that, you know, the majority of the college campuses, particularly Columbia University and other college campuses across the nation, you know, they can't find anybody to speak to the students except left-wing anti-Semites. You know, we know that Columbia University is notorious, you know, for inviting pro-Palestinian anti-Semitic so-called professors to come and address the graduates. You know, and we can't chalk it up to an accident. You know, we have to wonder, is there some master plan, you know, within academia of these colleges that, you know, the only people they can find to come out and address the graduates are Jew haters and Israel haters?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a conspiracy or a master plan, but I'll say this. It certainly is. It seems to me it's a battle by proxy. As I was saying, at the State Department and places in the U.S. government and within the United States, as you pointed out, on college campuses, you have these anti-Jewish elements. And what they're basically doing is they're helping those who are actually fighting Jews using actual weapons and actually drawing blood, say, in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, our role is, because what is going on in the United States is not actual battles against Jews, but by proxy, we have the ability, using language as we do on the air and by lobbying, by using these kind of legal means, we can also battle them on their own turf, so to speak. And I think by your being on the air, just what you're, you know, as the students hear things in universities, if they're driving around in their cars or have their radios turned on or listening to us through the internet, we're fighting back and we're going to win this battle. You know, comes the month of Adar, we increase our happiness. One thing we should emphasize, that for everything that we're saying, we say also with a confidence that we know we will be victorious, as the Jews were in those times. They were victorious, so we will be now in our own day victorious.
Absolutely, you know, and you know, all we have to do, you know, as Jews and B'nai Noach and good people all over the world, you know, is we have to couple, as you said so many times, yes, we have to pray, but we have to couple our prayer, you know, with some proactive work, you know, and if we combine those two, you know, then the victory is right before us.
It's right there, and we see it takes only individuals, right? As we read the Megillah, it was Esther, it was Mordechai. It was Harvona, you know, just individuals at the right place at the right time doing the right thing. David, thank you very much for your call. It's always nice to hear from you. Please call again soon.
Okay. I wish both of you a Freilich and Purim.
Freilich and Purim. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to emphasize that this idea of activism is Avram Ivri. Avram, he was an activist. The idea of activism is taking a stand and doing what's right. And I want to emphasize that it's not only, don't think that it's only what we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael. No, we're talking about right here there's things that everybody can do, whether it's Kiruv, whether it's on college campus, or if you're in the street. There are Jewish people all over the place, everywhere the Jewish people. And a lot of them are not religious, but you could see them. There might be somebody on your block, and you really should go over to them and invite them over. You can invite them for any Shabbos meal. You could just talk with them a little bit. A lot of young people there. And you'd be surprised. It's very, very easy. It's not hard at all. And you should get involved in Eish HaTorah. There's partners in Torah. And you can give us a call. And there's no question that we can guide you on things that you can do. And all these things are a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to go out and to talk to others and to expand your influence of what you know is right. It's a tremendous mitzvah. You're not supposed to just remain to yourself. There was a time that people did that, right after the war, of course. And there are times we understand that though people we insulated ourselves, so we will be strong from outside. We don't want to be affected from outside influences. Well, that's a reaction. But at the end of the day, if you look through the Torah, you will know, it will be very, very clear that our goal is not to insulate ourselves and to allow bad things happen and to allow ignorance creep in to other Jewish people who are not here. Our goal is to go out and to talk and to explain and to do what has to be done. And we cannot say that we're not going to do something because we're worried that it'll affect us. That's a big, big mistake, and it's a tremendous selfishness.
It's the essence of what Avraham Avinu was. I heard this from Rabbi Herzl Kranz. The way he explains it is, people sometimes say, this is my understanding, some people sometimes say that Avraham was the first monotheist, the first one to say there's one God. But where was Avraham learning? Where was Abraham learning? He was learning in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. They knew there was one God. They had the Mesorah. They had the tradition going back to Noah, going all the way back to Adam, that there's one God in the world. So what is it that Avraham did? So he took what was intramural, within the walls, so to speak, of the yeshiva, and he went out to the street. And that's the point of
Shem and Aver, mm-hmm. I just want to point out, there are certain things which you don't really need to have a tradition for. And one of them is to obviously that there's one God that controls everything. This is something which is something which you can come to the conclusion on your own. And yes, Shem Vaver, they were before him, but on this particular point, we know that Abraham, he thought about it from the time he was a child. And he came to the conclusion by logic.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out and he convinced people. We know the stories that Avraham went out and he told Nimrod. His father brought him to Nimrod, who was the king at that time. And Nimrod, he challenged his father, he challenged others to not worship more than one God. And he got into big trouble for it. And this we find by Purim. We find about Haman, about Mordechai, refused to bow down before Haman. He took a stand, even though, ultimately, it was that, I guess that was, you could say, the straw that broke the camel's back to enrage Haman to try to attack all the Jewish people, because he wanted people to bow down to him. Mordechai refused. Just like Avraham, you don't bow down to idolatry. And we have to learn from that. Let's take a very, very short break. We'll be right back. And please give us a call, 718-569-0921. Give us a call if you have anything to say about activism, even if you have something to say about Purim. Maybe you would like to enlighten us. Give us a call.
Do you have email? Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails and to Rabbi David Eidenson's events emails. The Jewish Activist Network emails are once a week and give you information about our upcoming Jewish Activist Network shows, including links to background information. Rabbi Eidenson's emails are brief Divrei Torah that are immediately relevant to our lives. Take control of your email inbox. Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails by sending an email to media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Subscribe to Rabbi Eidenson's emails by emailing media@secretscale.com. Do you shop in Midwood, Borough Park, Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, Crown Heights, or the Five Towns? Pick up a free copy of The Views, weekly available in many stores in these localities. To advertise in The Views, 718-377-8016. Are you looking for part-time work in advertising sales? The Jewish Activist Network has an opening for a sales representative. Email the Jewish Activist Network for details. media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Again, the email address for the Jewish Activist Network, media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Do you have Shemus at your house or at your shul? Allow us to handle your Shemus for you. We handle your Shemus in accordance with halacha. $20 for a 30-pound plastic kitchen bag of Shemus, $8 for a plastic shopping bag of Shemus. Larger quantities are eligible for our discount pricing. Call now for details. 917-517-7486. Purim and Pesach are coming. Now is the time to schedule your Shemus handling. 917-517-7486.
I have a question, and I'm not sure exactly I'm not sure how people would answer this, but imagine that you were in, I have two questions. If you were in Mordechai's shoes, there was somebody who, the tremendous, powerful person in the government, asked you to do what wasn't right. In the case of Haman, it was really bad. It was bowing down. But if you didn't do it, there was a real threat. Who knows what would happen? Maybe you would try to take revenge on you and thousands or millions of other people. In the case of Purim, it's not clear. It's not clear if Mordechai knew what Haman would do. And also sometimes you have to put your foot down because if you don't, then you may as well not keep anything. But nevertheless, that's the question. Would you do it or would you not do it? Another question, which maybe if we could get if you can answer. If you were given the permission to go out and fight and to kill your enemies who are trying to kill you and others, would you do it? In the same way that it happened in the times of Purim? Joe, what do you think? It's a tough question. I don't know. I'm not sure what the...
I find the second question fascinating because let's examine what goes on in the armed forces in the state of Israel. They have the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces. And we see over and over that although the IDF has the best weapons, has excellent trained soldiers, motivated soldiers, and when they have to, they can they can fight the fight, and they want to fight the fight. I've spoken to an officer and others that they know sometimes they just want to go out and fight, and they're restrained. The question is, I guess what I'm trying to say is that. Just that oftentimes that we see that the policy from the government, because ultimately the government controls the army, is that they kind of hold them under a tight rein and they don't allow them to go out and to fight Jewish enemies for ostensibly political reasons. And the question that you're asking is, given the opportunity for us, I guess on a local level, because that's what happened at the time of Purim, and not only in the land of Israel, but throughout this, in fact, all of it happened outside the land of Israel. If people were given the opportunity to say, here, you can go ahead, determine who your enemies are, and you can, and you have the right and to, so to speak, literally take the law in your own hands. The law is being given to you. It's being put in your hands, and you can go ahead and you can fight and kill your enemies. That's a good question. I'm trying to put myself in those times over 2,500 years ago when it happened, and trying to say if circumstances like that happened today, I think I have an answer. Which I would draw from the Holocaust, but we have a caller. Maybe we'll take a caller first.
And let's take the call. And I'd like to focus on what you said about locally, because that's a very interesting point. There was no Jewish army at all. It was actually all localized.
It was localized and outside the land of Israel. Let's take a caller. Caller, when you hear the tone, you're on the air. Welcome to the Jewish Activist Network. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello, my name is Yitzchak.
Yitzchak, hello. You're on.
And I would like to raise an issue concerning our inheritance. Each of us, as a member of Am Yisrael, we all have an inheritance in the land of Israel. And I would suggest that we should make a class action suit in international court and require that the Jewish homeland should be given back to the Jewish people. And there's no one has a right to give away our inheritance. And each of us have a portion in Eretz Yisrael. I would like to give a website and a telephone number if anyone's interested in pursuing and joining forces in this area.
Please go ahead.
Absolutely, go ahead.
Okay. Reb, R-E-B, Isaac, I-S-A-A-C, at netzero.com. And telephone number 718-664-7195. That's 718-664-7195.
So that's not a website. It's an email address and a phone number.
Right, an email address and a phone number.
Let me make sure I have it right. It's R-E-B, Reb Isaac, I-S-A-A-C, at netzero.com. And phone number is 718-664-7195. I'm fascinated by what you're saying. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this idea and what kind of progress you've made so far?
Well, I find that people are not aware that they have a portion of Eretz Yisrael, and it's a Jewish homeland. There's no Palestinian homeland. It's a Jewish homeland, and the fact that the present government in Israel is negotiating and discussing giving away parts of the Jewish homeland is outrageous, and I think people should stand up for their rights, and we should sue it, even if we don't, in international court, by bringing a class action suit. That means every member of Am Yisrael is entitled to their portion in Eretz Yisrael. And if it's a Jewish homeland, how could we even consider negotiating with any foreign elements to give away parts of the Jewish homeland?
The present government is,
as you say, influenced by other outside factors, and after 2,000 years in Golis, they don't have the right perspective at present. But as individuals, we have a right to ask for the international court to give us our homeland and allow every person to have his inheritance. We all have a portion, don't we?
Absolutely, and I think it's important what you're doing because it, at the very least, it educates the Jewish people who may not be aware of that, and it educates the non-Jews in the world who may or may not be aware of that, but it emphasizes that we're going to stand up for what is ours. I think your call is very timely, and it makes everything that we do worthwhile. It's the first time we're speaking to each other and hearing about the kind of work that you're doing, and that's exactly why we have this show, and I'm grateful that you called in. Let me give out your information again with your permission one more time. It's Reb Isaac, R-E-B-I-S-A-A-C, at netzero.com, and the phone number is 718-664-7195. If I can ask you before you go, Reb Isaac, Reb Yitzchak, how long have you been working on this?
Well, I've traveled. In the last 2 years, I've traveled from many different countries in South America and in Europe. I was in Buenos Aires, in Lima, Peru, in Barranquilla, Colombia, Bogota, Panama City, Cologne, Panama. There's a tremendous awareness of the Jewish people that they have a right, but we need to organize it and congeal our efforts together and make a statement by actually suing the present government in Israel that they have no right to give away the Jewish inheritance, the Jewish homeland, and to assert that it's our homeland, and we should stick up for it. If the international court will recognize it or not, that's secondary. the fact that Jews will become aware of their own rights to empower them. The actual first empowerment that's given to us in davening is we say Elikai neshama shenasata b'tahirihi.
Yes.
That God gave us a pure neshama. Then we talk about the world, at the barosa, at the yitzata, and the vachtabi. But the first empowerment is to realize that the neshama is completely pure, that it cannot be contaminated by anything in this world. No humming, no influence, no whatever they do, we will survive it because the neshama always remains pure. That there's a place in reality inside of us that needs no fixing. See, we're always busy trying to fix our portion in the world. And that is good for the 6 days of the week, but then there's a level which needs no fixing. Leisasa malacha, Reb Shlomo Kalbach used to say, means it needs no fixing. Actually, it has its mokor from the Baal Shem, Reb Nachum Chernobyler, Imari Nayim brings it down, that Leisasa malacha means there's a place in reality, and that's the awareness of Shabbos, is that there's a place that needs no fixing.
You know,
it's totally pure. Once we become aware of our neshama, that it's not contaminated, there's a hurricane around us, but in the center of the hurricane is total peace and tranquility.
Yes,
so there's always, in every situation that every person finds himself, there's a pure level there. Oh, it's always there. The answers are always there.
Yitzchak, thank you very much for that very enlightening call. And I think you've really hit at the core maybe of what we're also of what we're speaking about tonight in terms of in terms of Purim, in the sense that you're attacking the corrupt leadership of the government in Israel to the extent that they feel that they can barter, so to speak, on something which is not even theirs to give it all. That it's something that the land of Israel is the collective ownership of the Jewish people, and that Mordechai, and this fits in with what Mordechai was doing also. What Mordechai did is he said, you know, this is, I once heard, correct me, and I'll ask listeners to call in also if they're aware that there was a medrash or an understanding of what happened was that Haman insisted that people bow down to him. Mordechai was there at the gate because he was trying to find out what was going on with Esther. He wanted to be somehow have an in with the government, I guess, to try to influence what was going on for the benefit of the Jewish people. And people would bow down to Haman. Apparently Haman had an idol that he wore, say, around his neck, some sort of an idol. And that, strictly speaking, Mordechai could have, according to the actual halacha, my understanding is he could have bowed down to Haman. Because when you're bowing down to somebody wearing an idol, it's understood that you're bowing down to the man, which is perhaps not strictly forbidden. But because Mordechai wanted to remain pure, as Reb Yitzchak was saying, on the highest level, he wanted to say, we have a corrupt Jewish leadership. I have to be the other extreme. I have to keep myself as pure as possible. So he made a public stand and refused to have any kind of appearance or anything close that would look like idol worship, even if it was allowed according to halacha. And I think that's what we have to do today. It's kind of also what happened on Hanukkah also, where people were striving to do everything on the purest and the best levels.
I would like to just tell the audience that that call is very, very gratifying. It was unsolicited, and which is excellent. That means we have people who want to do something are taking action. And if you are doing something positive, please let us know. And I definitely want to follow up with that fellow, with Reb Isaac. And please. This is, I'm very happy that we had this caller. We are now, you were just mentioning before that how everything was localized. You had groups of people, Jewish people in different towns, rising up to defend themselves. It was not at all organized in the sense that there was no army. Jewish people were not in one place. They were all spread out. And people took action when they were given the chance, especially against the people who were trying to kill them.
And not only did they take action, I assume, my assumption is that everyone took action. And therefore, there wasn't a question of someone saying, well, I'm sitting and I'm studying Torah. How can I go out and fight against these enemies? Or someone saying, you know, I don't go for bloodshed. It seems to be that the Jewish people united entirely and stood together. I don't want to minimize the necessity to sit and learn Torah and not to have bittul, not to nullify that learning of Torah. But at the same time, it seems to be everyone stood up. And I don't want to, again, say that we are a bloodthirsty people. We're not. Just the opposite. Everyone knows the kindness and the many, many ways of the Torah that teach us how careful we have to be, down to not only not harming others physically, but even down to their feelings, down to animals, how careful we have to be regarding Tsar Bale Chaim, and even how we extend that even to inanimate objects, to sensitize ourselves, that we try not to even embarrass, so to speak, even an inanimate object. So this is how careful we are, and yet when the time comes that we have to stand up for our survival, we do it. And I think, as I may have mentioned earlier many times, that that what happens is where people often question whether we should be doing something like we're doing with our activism, and the answer is quite clearly yes, because we feel that there is a real danger to the Jewish people, and as important as the other aspects of our life are, we have to be involved also with the mitzvah of Lo Samot Al Dam Ra'echa. We're going to take a commercial break here, and we'll be right back. Again, our call-in number is 718-569-0921. Do you have email? Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails and to Rabbi David Eidenson's events emails. The Jewish Activist Network emails are once a week and give you information about our upcoming Jewish Activist Network shows, including links to background information. Rabbi Eidenson's emails are brief Divrei Torah that are immediately relevant to our lives. Take control of your email inbox. Subscribe to Jewish Activist Network emails by sending an email to media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Subscribe to Rabbi Eidenson's emails by emailing media@secretscale.com. Do you shop in Midwood, Borough Park, Sheepshead Bay, Bensonhurst, Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, Crown Heights, or the Five Towns? Pick up a free copy of The Views, weekly available in many stores in these localities. To advertise in The Views, 718-377-8016. Are you looking for part-time work in advertising sales? The Jewish Activist Network has an opening for a sales representative. Email the Jewish Activist Network for details. media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Again, the email address for the Jewish Activist Network, media@jewishactivistnetwork.com. Do you have Shemus at your house or at your shul? Allow us to handle your Shemus for you. We handle your Shemus in accordance with halacha. $20 for a 30-pound plastic kitchen bag of Shemus, $8 for a plastic shopping bag of Shemus. Larger quantities are eligible for our discount pricing. Call now for details. 917-517-7486. Purim and Pesach are coming. Now is the time to schedule your Shemus handling. 917-517-7486.
And we are back. I'd like to do a follow-up on the questions that I asked before. Let's take it down a notch. So the questions we asked before were a little bit heavy questions. We asked, would you, if you were given the chance, would you fight and actually take action, violent action, against enemies that were trying to kill you? If you were given the chance and told to go do it. It's a heavy question, something which you really have to think about. Not because you have to think about it just emotionally. I'm not referring to whether it's right or wrong. Clearly, if somebody's trying to kill you, it's right. You have to defend yourself. So to me, it's not a question of right or wrong. The question is that I'm asking you is, internally, what would you do? And then I asked the question, of course, we can go back all the way to Amalek in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu and the times of Shaul. Would you take action against a terrible, terrible nation that did what they did and continued to do what they were doing to the Jewish people? They continued. They were terrible people all throughout. And I am going to now make it, bring it even simpler, and talk about things which are uncomfortable. We're going to be taking a caller right after that. But before we take the caller, let me just throw this question out. A lot of times we are walking on the streets. We are at work. We see other people with us, Jewish people, who are not religious. They were brought up, and they were not brought up with the knowledge that we have. This thing had this over the last generation, a few generations, a lot of people, they strayed away from the path of Judaism, and they strayed to an extent that they just don't know anything. Would you speak to people at work, give them, let's say, Hamantashen, Pesach's coming up, give them matzahs, tell them about the story of Pesach, invite them over? Or are you the type which is uncomfortable doing that? Because you were, you know, it's uncomfortable to go over and speak to somebody and to take simple action. So I'm not asking whether it's right or wrong. Of course it's right. And I know that when you call up, you're going to tell me, yes, it's the right thing to do. I'm referring now, again, emotionally. Are you the type of person that would be willing to step forward and take action? Now, it could be quiet action. What about putting out a table and handing out flyers? A little bit more, the next level of action, where you could reach more people than just speaking to the few people that are next to you at your desk or in your school. I think it's something to think about. I'm going to take a caller.
Hello, Baruch. Hello. You're on the air with us on the Jewish Activist Network. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling regarding the last call about the Israel, the land is ours, we shouldn't give it away.
Okay.
I mean, what do we think, what does Golos mean? I mean, actually, this is what Golos means, that we are not empowered to do anything about it.
Well, all I could tell you is that I'm just going to give you a very direct Maramakum. And the Maramakum will be the Ramban. And I'll tell you exactly where to look. It's very important to learn these things inside from the Rishonim. The Ramban you will find in between, the Rambam, he wrote the Sefer HaMitzvahs. After the list of the Sefer, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, after the Mitzvahs Aseh, there are a few Mitzvahs that the Ramban felt that the Rambam should have included. Not that the Rambam didn't accept the concepts, but the Ramban felt they should have been counted as one of the 613, not included in others. And one of them is the Mitzvah of going to Eretz Yisrael, living there, and making sure that only Jewish people control Eretz Yisrael, not foreigners, not Goyim. And he says it's a mitzvah for all times. Whether the Beis HaMikdash is standing, whether it's not standing, it's a mitzvah for nowadays. And when you talk about Golos is unfortunate. It's not a mitzvah to be in Golos. Golos is what happens after we violated the Torah and we were forced to leave, exactly as it says in Devarim what would happen. That doesn't mean that it's mitzvah that you're supposed to stay in Golos. There's no mitzvah to be in Golos.
Right, but Golos means that we don't have any power and we shouldn't have any power. And,
let me ask you, weren't the people in Golos in the time of Mordechai and Esther?
Excuse me?
Weren't the Jewish people in Golos by Mordechai and Esther when they were under Achashverosh?
Yeah, they were.
So, but over there, so how did they go and do what they did?
What did they do?
Well, they went and they took weapons, and they killed their enemies.
Right. Because they had permission from the king at that time, Ahasuerus. If not, they wouldn't be able to do it. They did it. The first thing they did, they were mispowel. They went to the smedzish. They took all the kids together.
Listen, you're not going to get an argument from me saying that you shouldn't be mispowel. Of course, you should be mispowel.
No. I'm saying the first action wasn't to go and to make protests or these kind of things. The first action was to be mispowel because they knew they're in Golos and there's no other way.
Yeah,
and
you're saying first and second.
Then,
I'm not talking about first and second.
Right.
The point is that there was no problem doing what they did.
Right, but when they have permission from the king in order for the government to
so let me work
that's
with
why
you.
They did it. But without that, with the self, they wouldn't have permission to do that.
Do you think? Let me ask you this. Let's say Achashverosh didn't give permission. Let's think this through. If you didn't give permission, so then they would have to just let themselves be killed.
I'm not going into this halacha. In the case of Gullus, they were not allowed to do anything against the government, anything against the thing. It's supposed to be in Gullus. It's supposed to just follow
Let me just say like this. First of all, let me say like this. Even if I'll give that to you, but I do want you to look up the Ma'am Malcolm. At some point, you should look it up and study it. It's a Ramban. It's a full mitzvah.
You're telling me Ramban. I'll check it out.
Let me just grant what you're saying, just for the sake of argument. Right now, Eretz Yisrael, they're under, and all the people living there. And who knows what could happen outside of Eretz Yisrael, like what happened during the Holocaust, God forbid. They're under direct threat. They're under a threat from Iran, who's threatening to kill them. They're being attacked on a constant basis, and thousands of people were killed just by attrition. The Arabs in Eretz Yisrael have killed through bombs thousands and thousands of people. We're not talking about any of the wars. We're just talking about just being bombed and killed. And the way that they're under attack, even if I grant what you're saying, I could definitely, even you should agree that you could compare it to things that happened to Jewish people in the past.
Right, but the threat is not going to be smaller if Israel gives up land, if they don't. It has nothing to do one with each other. If the threat will be bigger if they don't give up. I'm not saying that they have to give up. I don't know the political stuff, what's going on. I'm just saying the threat, what you're saying, is a threat. I'm not taking it away. But it's not going to be...
Let me just tell you, just working with what you're saying, I'm going to tell you now also, I'm going to ask you to look this up, as far as this is in Hilchos Shabbos. In Hilchos Shabbos it says that if a goyim come and they attack, they surround a city in Eretz Yisrael. And this is right now, this is in the Shulchan Aruch. If it's a city in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, so then you say, are they coming for lives or are they coming just for money? If it's for money, you don't mechal Shabbos. If it's for lives, you do, in the middle of the country. But if it's a city on the edge of the country of Eretz Yisrael, even for straw, it's definitely just for a little bit of money, you go out and you fight with them. Because that's what they would do. They would come and attack the border cities, and Eretz Yisrael would become smaller and smaller. It was extremely dangerous. A border city had to be defended much more. And the reason I'm pointing out to you, because that's Hilchos Shabbos, which applies nowadays.
Can I ask you a question, Baruch? You were saying that it's only because Achashverosh gave permission that the Jews in the times of Purim were able to stand up and fight. But wasn't it a Jew Mordechai, and wasn't it a Jew Esther who made the government, who basically manipulated the government to turn around and to give the Jews permission to fight? So don't we have some, can't we follow their example as saying that we can be involved and can do things now?
No, I didn't say that you're not allowed to be involved with the government. I mean, if you do it the diplomatic way, you don't go anything against nobody, I'm not saying it's, why not? I mean, no, Mordechai didn't do nothing against the government. Just the opposite. He tried to help. He saved the Hashverus from death. Through his helpers, and Hashem made the rest through a nest.
So that's what we're working within. We're trying to convince people.
I don't think it's right to say that it's our land and we should the power of the land. I don't think that's right to say. Yeah,
I don't see why not.
That's how we do it. That's how we make an impact on the foreign, on the outside.
Mordechai and Esther didn't have no interest that the land should be there, that anything should be there. Just the Jews should be there.
Well, listen, think about what you're saying. Do you know that like the next year after that, Ezra was already taking everybody up there to Israel?
We're just about out of time.
You have to put it together.
We're just about out of time. Baruch, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you for your call. We do appreciate it. And call again. Why not?
You're tuned in to the Jewish Activist Network. We broadcast Wednesday nights from midnight to 1 a.m. We wish everybody a happy Purim. And I want to emphasize, we will be victorious over our enemies, as we always have been throughout history, with Hashem's help. Tune in again next week, Wednesday night at midnight.